episode. It's the post-draft recap with our good friend Ben Grant of the X's and Argos. And we get ready for training camp. It's packing 12. Crack those cold ones. It's the Argos Fancast. You can find us at Argos Fancast or anywhere you find your friendly neighborhood podcast. Just search Argos Fancast or find us directly on Spotify. We're proud to be powered by Podcast for Spotify or Spotify for Podcasters, something like that. But find us on Spotify directly. Just search Argos Fancast. I am Clay Chisholm. You can find me at All Kinds of Clay. And joining us, as always, our resident historian from ArgoFans.com. He is our VP of Football Operations, Will Gertler, MBA.
Hi, everybody. You can find me on Twitter at ArgoFans or at www.ArgoFans.com.
And from the Double Blue Order, Sir Douglas of House Ballinger, second of his name, Lord of Section 116, Warden of the South Side, and Protector of the Realm.
Goodness me, it's been a while since I've done one of these. You can find me on Twitter at DougB519. You can find the Double Blue Order on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. We also have a merch store, and that's at doubleblueorder.ca. We've got some new stuff coming out very, very soon. But in honor of our good friend McLeod Arthur Thompson, the Lothlum t-shirt is still there. Breakers fans, if you're listening, doublebluorder.ca.
I'm glad we could still include that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's tearing that up down there.
Oh, yeah, he's with the passing leader down there. If the Breakers are 3-0.
As if there was any doubt.
Oh, but back up here in Canada, it's the off season. It keeps rolling along. We had the combine, which our friend Ben Grant of the X and Argos, who's going to join us a little bit later, had the chance to attend and basically judge some of these draft picks that happened on Tuesday of this week. And the Argos, we didn't pick until the second round, number 16, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty. It's pretty late.
Pretty late, and we'll go through a little bit more in depth with Ben when we bring him on in a little bit. Starting off round two, we had the 16th pick overall. We picked Jared Wayne, wide receiver from Pittsburgh. Looked to me like best player on the board there. He's signed a contract, an undrafted free agent contract with the Houston Texans. So may see him at training camp, may not. Not for sure yet. See what happens down there. Third round, we had the 27th pick. We picked Adam Guillemette, long snapper from Holy Cross. Fourth round, 36th pick, we picked Spencer Nichols, listed as a running back, but based on what I saw, he's probably more of a fullback from Western. At the fifth round, number 45, we had Edouard Paradis from Houston Christian, offensive lineman. Then in the sixth round, we had two picks. One first at 47, Richard Burton, wide receiver from Queens. And this is going to be the hard one. At pick number 54, Ife Onyemenem. I'm probably pronouncing that horribly. Will, did you get our pronunciation guide?
No.
No, of course not.
Yeah, it didn't come in time, did it?
Oh, well, linebacker from Wilfrid Laurier. And then seventh round at number 63, we picked Brendan Murphy, DB from Western.
They were all easy until
I got to Ife. And then eighth round, number 72 overall pick, Anthony Vandal from Sherbrooke. And not not to be outshined, but they did have the global draft, which consisted of two rounds, and we had the number 9 and number 18 pick. So we picked up a kicker from Mexico, Alfredo
Lozada.
Gachuz Lozada.
You didn't have to try the middle part.
Well, he goes by Gachuz Lozada. Gachuz, I believe. I'm probably screwing that one up too. He played for the Naucalpan Raptors of the LFA in Mexico. And we also picked up a Brit, Emmanuel Falola, linebacker from England. He's signed with the Prague Lions of the European Football League for 2023. Played for the Great Britain national team and as well as the Bristol Aztecs of the Premiership of British League, helping them go deep into the playoff. Wow, there is a lot more football in Europe than I realized.
Well, every country has a league.
You got the European Football League, we got German leagues, we got British leagues, they got Premiership. There's a second division in the university ranks, so that means there's at least two levels of football at the university ranks in England, in Europe. That's pretty good. He's the Brit fellow is a linebacker, so. But that's, yeah, and the picture they got up, he looks pretty scary.
One thing I have to mention about the global draft, awful lot of Australian punters.
Wait, everybody's got to have one now.
Well, ours was the best.
Well, yeah, of course.
Go figure. Trendsetters. That's us.
Now, everybody's got to have their own one now. Yeah, there were a lot. If you were Australian, you were a punter and you got picked.
Yeah, the Saskatchewan Topes. Adam Corsack. The Blue Bombers took Jameson Shahan. The Tiger Cats took Lou Headley. And the Alouettes took Reese Burns. But Bermuda got on the board with a punter named Carl Schmitz. Sounds like a beer.
I still think we need to get our Australian punter on the program and ask him who he's gotten for the AFL this season.
Okay. Challenge accepted.
It's a long shot, but I mean, hey, I don't know. Their season's about as long as ours is, so.
I won't have any idea what he's talking about, but.
Don't worry, he and I will converse.
I may have a little bit of an idea, just a little bit, like a hair. I've watched a handful of games so far.
It's really I love it. It's chaos with kicking. It's awesome.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. It's chaos with kicking.
Chaos with kicking and like forced ways. I still don't get the scoring in it, but
lots and lots of rouges. They call them behinds, but we're Canadian. We all know they're rouges.
Yeah, well, maybe when we get Mr. Haggerty on, we can get him to bring that back and you know, help plant the seed.
And the thing is, they actually keep track of them, too. That's the best part. Like, in the score line, when you actually read a score line, it's actually you read all the goals, followed by the behinds, and then the total score.
Okay.
So that's why when you hear, say, for example, let's say at halftime, Melbourne's like 6-1-37, let's say. That means they've scored six goals and got one behind.
All right. And
goal is 6 points, and behind is one. So, like I said, it's a frickin' rouge.
It's a fun game.
It's a great game to watch. It's a spectacular sport to watch.
And it's nice that they play it in our off season too.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least it's televised here in our off season.
Yeah, it is. It is available. It is available on our broadcast partner TSN. If anyone's so inclined to get up very early in the morning to watch it.
Oh, they show replays during the day.
Yeah.
In the afternoon when they've got nothing else on.
Problem is, whenever I try to follow it, it's like I always end up getting the score before I ever even get a chance to watch a game.
See, I'm not that far into it yet. I'm still at the point of, it's Aussie Rules Football on. Let's watch that.
Yeah. Okay. It looks okay. So it looks like the grand fall. So we have till about end of September.
Okay.
Yeah, because September 30th, that's when they have the grand final. So that's their Grey Cup. And they usually pack their biggest stadium to do it. So, yeah, and their biggest, and I think it's the Melbourne Cricket Ground. It's like, got like 100,000, you can get 100,000 people in it easy.
Yeah, well, it's a cricket stadium. Of course they're going to get it. You know.
Yeah, of course it's going to be huge, right? But
yeah, it's a different game. Yeah, well, we're gonna okay. Now I'm really interested in getting him on and seeing what I really hope he follows it. I really do, because then this would be like, you know, just a very awkward interview with him.
Yeah, like that would be something that I think we would have to vet beforehand. You know, it's like, do you follow Aussie Rules Football at all? And if he says no, it's like, okay, never mind. We'll still have you on to discuss the finer art of punting, but
yeah, because I think he went to school in the States, didn't he?
Kentucky.
Yeah. Oh well, we talked a little bit about the draft before we bring Ben on. You know, the Argos have been doing some nice things for fans this offseason, quietly doing some very interesting things. They hosted a locker room tour of sorts, not a big locker room, but they get your picture with the Grey Cup, which both Will and I were able to attend. And got some professional photos done with the Grey Cup. And the other neat thing they did, and Will, you've got firsthand knowledge of this because you were one of the winners. Some people got to spend some time with the Grey Cup. Some fans got to spend some time with the Grey Cup.
Yeah, so one of the things the Argos did back in February was when Rob Richardson had his time with the Cup, he arranged for 109 visits to members' houses or places of business to have some time with the Grey Cup. So I entered the contest and was one of the 109 places selected. So, you know, on a Tuesday morning, and Rob Richardson came, you know, with Mitch Dennis and brought the cup to my house and, you know, had a chance to take pictures with it for, you know, 20, 30 minutes. My dog was petrified of his reflection and wouldn't go near the thing. But it was fun. And, you know, you got to look at the nameplates and you know, look where Adriano Belli broke the cup back in 2012, and all in all, it was a very good initiative. And then also a few weeks later, Daniel Adebaboye hosted fans at Scarborough Town Center with the Cup.
Yeah, and there was a pretty good turnout for that as well, too.
There was, yeah.
So it's kind of nice. You know, it's not something you hear a lot of. I don't know if any other team has done, you know, a contest where a fan, where multiple fans win some time with the Cup themselves. But I mean, we, you know, got to hand it to Rob Richardson. That's what he I guess he pitched that to the Argos. That's what he wanted to do. And that was a great initiative. I hope that this kind of spawns all teams and the Argos to keep doing this. Cause I mean, the all teams are just going to have to wait a few years for the Argos to decide when they don't want to win the Grey Cup anymore. Because obviously it's going to happen again this year and again the following year.
All the way through to the end of the decade.
Yeah, why not?
Many.
Many, many Grey Cups.
Yeah. And, of course, they did, as Clay mentioned, they did the locker room tour with pictures of the Grey Cup, which is also a great initiative.
Yeah, that was neat. We got to go to the BMO Club, which, I mean, unless you're paying a little bit, most people don't get to go in there.
Well,
I was in there once. It's actually pretty nice in there.
It was nice.
It is. The Argos have done some events in there from time to time during the off season.
Yeah, they had to, hold on. Was it on the east side of the stadium or west side of the stadium?
East side.
Okay, so all right, so yeah, they had the draft party in there.
They did. Yeah.
Remember a few years ago.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so we've all been in there.
Well, I didn't get to go to the draft party a couple years ago. I was busy.
Just like how I was busy this time when everyone got to go for the locker room tour and wow. Get a picture of the Grey Cup. That's whatever.
Locker room tour. They had a few. It's basically just line up and walk through. And yeah.
Who am I kidding? They wouldn't let me near the Grey Cup because I'd make sweet love to that thing.
Well, you'd have a professional photographer.
Friggin' boudoir photos with a trophy. This has gotten bad. Okay.
Let's get Ben on before this gets any worse.
We're trying to pass time here.
It's not like the Grey Cup hasn't slept with, you know, giant naked men before.
You know what? This is probably true. This is probably very true.
Just add to
the storied history, you know.
I mean, like every year you hear of, you know, one of the offensive linemen who had the Grey Cup in his bed. Mm. Yeah, this has gotten disturbing. Let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're welcoming our draft expert Ben Grant from the X's and Argos. You've probably covered more of this than any of us have in a lifetime.
It's a long off season, the draft. First of all, I'm really happy to be back with you guys. It's always great to talk Argos football with you guys. But yeah, this draft thing, I love it. But by the time we get to, you know, post draft, I'm happy it's done with, because it's a lot of names. It's a lot of watching film, and I do enjoy that stuff. But there's a point where I'm ready for non-recorded football.
Well, we got about
probably about 2 weeks.
Yeah, about a week before they start. Well, no, they start to report to camp on the 10th. So at least the rookies and quarterbacks. So that's
about a week from now.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing about the CFL draft is the draft happens and then like everything's 100 miles an hour. But they have to do it that way. They don't want to do it that way, but they have to because they can't hold the draft before the NFL draft. So that's the reason for the setup. But from a fan perspective, it's great because it is now basically football season.
Now with that, with going right to the draft and the players we drafted, first off, before we get to any one of the specifics, have you got a pronunciation guide for our number 54 pick yet?
I do not, but I've got a bit of guidance. So, Ify Anyamenem. That's my best go at it. Okay. Yeah, I talked to Larry Justanis today, and he coached Ify at Football North, and that's my best attempt at it. But yeah, Ify Anyamenem is what I'm gonna go with. But I'd like to ask. I always like players to tell me themselves, because sometimes we find out late in the season, like Jeremiah Hedell, who no one called Hedell all last season. It wasn't until I think the meaningless Montreal game that he finally mentioned to a few people, just so you know, my name's Hedell. And everyone had been calling him Hadel and all sorts of other things that season. So often the guys just won't say. And so I like to try and ask if, you know, whenever I talk to them, just so I'm clear, can you give me a pronunciation just so I'm not making a mess of it? Because I have made a mess of other names in the past. So.
Oh, I know. I made a mess of that player's name already, and I still can't.
It's just going to be like hatchet job after hatchet job after hatchet job. So yeah,
I think there was a veteran who let everybody mispronounce his name for like a few years on a few different teams. a while back.
And then finally one day it's like, just yeah. So you know, it's this. Yeah. And then it's so hard at that point. It's so hard to change it. Once you start, like I had that problem with Toshiki Sato, who I called Sato for the longest time. And it's not like he was with the Argos for 10 years or something like that, but I spent the whole first season saying it wrong. And then I knew, and every time I had to stop myself, and I got to a point where I couldn't remember which was wrong and which was right. And I hate that. I feel, because that's, you know, that's part of our responsibility is to correctly pronounce the names. You know, that it's disrespectful not to at least give your best effort to it. And I always felt like such an idiot forgetting such what should be a, you know, fairly easy name for me to say.
Sato, you know, if you were a wrestling fan, you knew the Orient Express, Sato and Tanaka.
I'd forgotten about those guys, actually.
So that's why we keep Will around. He's got he can reference anything from the past.
Hard names are like the Srebo and Lubo Zizakovic. You know, like, remember those guys?
Yeah, there have been some really difficult ones, but yeah, that's definitely the most difficult in this year. Ify and Ify is also short. His full name is. Oh, I can't remember. I would make a mess of it now, but yeah, but Ify is short. But yeah, I remember first seeing Ify playing high school football. Such a dynamic high school player. But I remember wondering, you know, what would happen with him, because he's not the biggest guy, but he plays so much bigger than he is. And then he was able to keep doing it at Laurier, and you know, we'll see if he can keep doing it in the CFL too. But I think he's been doubted every step of the way, and just finds a way to get it done regardless. So hopefully he can do that in Toronto.
His height and weight doesn't seem too.
Oh, he's not tiny, but remember he was essentially playing a middle linebacker spot at Laurier. They kind of mixed it up a little bit. Yes. They move guys around, but I don't know if he's, and again, I don't want to doubt him because you know, you end up eating your words, but he doesn't seem quite fast enough for a Willbacker, certainly a Sam. And he doesn't seem quite big enough to play Mac. And so the question is, well, what does he do?
Well, maybe special teams to start off with.
And that's where I think he can be great. And I'm sorry, I'm so out of order here. We started talking about names, and now I'm already on to the sixth round selection.
It's fine.
I made a mess of your schedule.
Go with the flow.
We have, no, you should know by now, we have very little schedule on this show.
All right, so we're in segment 3.5 here, I think.
I think we're jumping around. I think we jumped to 9, well, then we're back to 3, and we'll be up to 7 at some point.
Well, since we're you know, completely out of order as far as numbers go, other guys that we drafted, which one that excites you the most?
That's a great question. I don't know. I guess It's not the best answer. It's not the most exciting answer. I'm really excited about Adam Guillemette, the long snapper from Holy Cross. I'm not a special teams guy, and so it's a weird thing for me to say I'm excited about a long snapper, but that should tell you something. I fell in love with this guy's long snaps. They're so crisp and laser-like. They are just a joy to watch. You guys have been out to Argo's practice. You know the sound and the look when Beatty just gets a hold of a ball. And even though it's just practice and he's just standing out there with one other guy on the field, you can't help but stare as that ball travels like 70 yards and, you lose it in the sky. It's just one of those things. And as a long snapper, Guillemette's got one of those things where you watch him long snap, especially that punt long snap, and it just flies back there in a way that seems to defy gravity because there's no arc. It is a laser beam from his hands right into the punter's hands. And I think that's one of the reasons I'm so excited about him. But I hate that answer because, you've got dynamic receivers and linebackers and DBs who are going to do great things. And yet I'm talking about a long snapper, but he's a difference maker. I was really hoping the Argos would draft him. I had him ranked pretty high. I think I had him at 19 on my board. And I felt that was sort of a need for the Argos. So that was a relief because Edmonton took the only other long snapper I would have been happy with in this draft. And that was in that same round. I thought, man, if someone else jumps in here or if they don't end up taking Guillemette, then the only other long snapper really like potentially CFL level long snapper probably isn't worth drafting for the Argos just because I think they've got better probably in Max Latour, so they would have left it at that point.
Well, as a former long snapper, I am not disappointed that that's the one you're excited about. I actually had in my brain noted question like, okay, is Adam Guillemette an upgrade from Max Latour?
And I believe he is. Yeah, Max Latour, I hate saying anything bad about Max Latour, and that's not how I mean this to come off, because Max Latour has done everything that has been asked of him. But remember that he's not a player that this staff chose. He was a player that this staff was sort of forced to go out and get. They needed help. Jake Reinhardt ended up getting injured midseason. They needed someone to come in immediately, and Max Latour was available. He's CFL level. There's no question he can do the job, but there's also a reason that he wasn't on a roster at that point in the season. There's a reason that the other eight teams in the league didn't have him on their roster. And so he can do the job, but Guillemette has a chance to be one of the best long snappers in the league. He might be the best long snapper in the league in a year or two.
And the Argos have lots of luck with players from Holy Cross. It's a small sample size, but... Gil Fennerty is the other player, and he was pretty good.
That's enough on its own. Gil Fennerty is, if you got Gil Fennerty, that's a good enough list for me.
So you actually had Jared Wayne, number 16, on your draft board, and that's where he ended up going. Surprised they went for a futures pick there, or?
A little bit. I think Jared Wayne was the best receiver in the draft. I don't think there's any question about that. He had my highest film grade of all the receivers by far. The reason I had him lower than a couple of guys is because he signed a UDFA contract with the Houston Texans, and it's a pretty sizable one. I think we're talking $200,000, and those typically mean you're at the very least going to stick around the league for a year. Not necessarily with the Texans, although I think he may. But even if he ends up getting cut from the Texans, he probably is on someone else's practice squad for a little bit. And then maybe he waits for a month and he's on someone else's. It would be in his best interest, I think, to hang around the NFL for a year. So from that standpoint, I was surprised because I don't think it's that likely we see Jared Wayne this season. I do think we see him at some point, which is why I still had him as high as 16. I think it's worth a gamble at 16. But with Clark Barnes still on the board, that was a difficult one. I think probably I would have taken Clark Barnes there. I think I would have considered Jeremy Murphy there, the receiver out of Concordia. Clark Barnes is lightning fast. He's not quite as polished as Jared Wayne, but man, he's a good receiver, and that's another guy I've been watching since high school, and he's torn it up at every level. So I think that's Clark Barnes is a much safer pick. Jared Wayne has a potential to be a home run. So it's a situation that Toronto's fortunate enough to be in. You look at teams like Calgary, they couldn't afford to take a risk like that. Teams that are either short of Canadian talent or have injuries heading into the season, they couldn't risk not having someone that wouldn't be here at all this year. But the Argos didn't need a single player from this draft to do anything at all this season. And in fact, a lot of these guys can actually go back to school if that is what the situation dictates. So there's no one in this draft class that's really going to be pressed into service. I think Adam Guillemette is probably the only guy that I would say is a lock to be on the roster for sure this year. And I think some of these other guys might go back to school. We might see Jared Wayne, float around the NFL for a year, maybe two, before he comes up north. But that's a great position to be in because it sets them up so well for the future, and they're already in a good position for this year.
Last year, a lot of the later round guys ended up making the team outright.
Yeah, I know. They've drafted so well. Like this is the same thing with this draft too. Like even the last picks, like Anthony Vandal, looking at who was the sixth round pick there? Brendan Murphy, right, from Western. Like those guys, you take in the seventh round, the eighth round, those two picks. Normally seventh and eighth round picks, you're taking flyers on NFL guys that you probably are never going to see up here. Those guys are real players. Like Anthony Vandal, a three-time All-Star in the RSEQ. That's serious. And Brendan Murphy's only dropped that far because he's got a knee injury and he's probably not going to be available this season. But he's an excellent DB. And so, for next season, he's probably going to come into camp next season with a real shot at challenging for at the very least the backup safety spot, if not more than that. So, and to get those guys late, it's just such a smart draft strategy. And JB always says this on our show, like we don't like to just cheerlead because then it just feels like that we're not giving it honest criticism or analysis. And so we kind of been waiting in a way for the Argos to mess up a draft, and they just don't. There's always one pick where we're like, I don't know what that's about. But other than that, it's pretty good. There's great value with all these picks. Like looking at where I had them projected and where the Argos ended up taking these players, the value is tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, just looking back, 2020, we're still waiting to see if some of those linemen can become full-time guys. But yeah, you look back and in 20, what was the stat that Marshall Ferguson put out? The Argos have more guys still under contract dating back, was it 5-6 years and any other
6 years? Yeah.
And it wasn't even close. I think Winnipeg was the next closest and they were like 20% away. And of course, those are the two teams that were in the Grey Cup last season. It matters so much. And I wish CFL fans would realize, because there's not a lot of attention paid to the draft. And I wish CFL fans would realize just how important this is. And it's hard to visualize because you don't see these players that are picked in yesterday's draft. You don't see them typically show up on the highlights of the night and things like that. That's not who we're talking about for the most part. Sometimes you do, but mostly these are role players. But it's these guys that allow you to win Grey Cups, to win divisions, to get to the playoffs. Because if you've got, because of the way the ratio works, if you've got a hole somewhere in your starting lineup, coaches are smart enough to be able to exploit that. And if you've got a weakness somewhere and you're seven Canadians that you've got to start, if you don't do a good job in this draft for a couple of years in a row, you're going to have a giant sized hole somewhere. And coaches will pick on that and they'll exploit that and they'll make you compensate for that. And you're going to lose football games because of that. It's hugely important. And if you can be like the Argos are, where you've got not just a lack of weaknesses, but you've got strengths. You've got Curley Gittens Jr., who is a star on the team, and he's one of your dressed Canadians. Well, that puts you in an even better position. So the draft matters a lot. The if you hit well, you know, if you actually connect, the draft is huge. It's why you succeed.
The other player that I wanted to ask you about was their third pick at number 36, Spencer Nichols. They call him a running back, but from what I saw from his stats, he looks more like a fullback. Is you know, we Declan Cross retired, had the luscious mane there, and Spencer Nichols, his photo that they've used from Western, man, that guy can rival Declan Cross for some of the greatest hair that we've seen come out of this draft.
His hair is
serious flow going on.
He was the one guy that I thought was a bit of a reach. I think I had him at 62, if memory serves, and they took him at 36. And I thought that was a little bit out of nowhere for me. And you're right, Clay, he's not a running back. I think he has one carry in his entire career at Western. And I think he averaged one reception every three games he played. So he'll be used to the workload that he gets as a receiver and back in Coach Dinwiddie's system. We know how little Coach Dinwiddie uses the fullback tight end spot in the receiving game. So, you know, he's going to be here essentially as a blocking back, doing the job that we've seen the Argos tight ends slash fullbacks do over the last couple of years. He's really good at that stuff. He's a really solidly built human being. He's got good speed for his size. He hits like a truck. He has really good instincts, a really good sense for angles too. You don't see him get sidestepped. He was used primarily, like the way Western ran their run game. They would have him, and we've seen the Argos run very similar plays with their fullbacks too. They'd have him lined up sort of as an H-back, so a yard back from the tackle and a yard away from the tackle. And then just as the ball is being snapped, he'll come right across the formation and usually either kick out the defensive end or perhaps wrap around the defensive end and turn upfield or leak out into the flats as a receiver, which and not get thrown to. Those are the ways in which he was mostly used at Western. And I think that translates really well to how the Argos use their fullbacks in the CFL. So I don't think it's going to be much of a learning curve for him. And maybe that system, maybe that style is why they had him ranked so much higher than I did.
Now, the other question I had, and this is purely for my benefit, because I played high school ball in London. He's a London native. I could not for the life of me find where he played high school ball in the London area.
That's a good question. I don't know. No, I do not know the answer to that.
I figured of all people, you would know.
I usually do. I'm usually really good at that. And I don't have that anywhere in my notes on him. So, yeah, I'll see if I can dig that up for you. But no, I couldn't tell you based on my notes or off the top of my head.
Yeah, sounds like a training camp question if you ask me.
Might be.
Well, the OUA stats don't tell you anything.
They're not great, no.
No, and his the Western thing doesn't even have a bio on him, so.
Well, it doesn't even tell you how to pronounce whatever that guy's name is pronounced. That's what the first place I looked, and it said nothing.
Yeah, there's not. It's disappointing the web presence of a lot of the U Sports teams and the conferences, U Sports itself. You know, when you compare it to what you see, anytime you're trying to research anything for an NCAA guy, even if they're a D3 team, there's a long bio about them, where they came from playing high school, what system they played in, their stats every year, games they were injured. You can find all that stuff. It is really difficult digging up things. Most of the stuff that I find is from actually talking to the players or coaches, because there's just not a lot of other resources, unfortunately.
So I found something on Facebook.
I actually found his high school and his
South.
He played for the South Lions.
Whatever that means.
They are one of the better. In the last decade, they've been one of the better teams out of London.
There you go.
London South Collegiate Institute?
Yep. Where'd That's you actually go? That I went to Oak Ridge. London South is actually, that is the school if you were deemed to be, I can't remember what the correct term is, but if you're deemed to be smart, they say gifted.
Gifted.
It's been called a bunch of different things, but that is where all the smart people go.
Well, that's another bonus for Spencer Nichols. I'm going to put that on my notes right here, Clay.
And he also played for the Mustangs junior varsity under 18 team as well.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah. Okay. Well, we figured that out. Now, if
one out of a thousand things we need to figure out.
And looking at this draft, is there anybody that you feel like the Argos maybe missed out on that they could have grabbed?
There's a couple guys. Like I wondered about Eric Colonna. He's one that stood out to me. He was a safety at Queens. I love watching this guy play because you know how much fun it is when there's a guy on your team that the rest of the league hates. Eric Colonna can be that guy. He's a guy that you adore when he's on your team, but he gets under the skin of everyone he goes up against. He's undersized, and so I wasn't sure he'd get drafted or not, but I was kind of hoping someone would take a late round flyer on him. But I don't think he ended up getting drafted by anybody. But he'd be a great guy to bring into a camp situation. And if he can get into a camp, I think that he can make a practice roster because he's just one of those guys that coaches fall in love with. He hits so hard and he's great at reading concepts from that deep safety position. He just sees it develop before anyone else does. And he gets there before the receiver's expecting him to. And, you know, you watch some of his film, you can pick any game and look at Eric Colonna, and he's ruining somebody's day every single team he goes up against. And it affects guys too. There was a game I was watching, Queens Ottawa, and he made a hit early in the game. It was such a devastating hit on a post route. It ended up being sort of a fatter post, and he came downhill and just clobbered this receiver. And for the rest of the game, the GGs had alligator arms going over the middle. They were second guessing it. They weren't going for balls over the middle. And to do that to a good U Sports team like the Ottawa GGs says something. Like when you can get in their heads, that's you've made a pretty big difference there. So I would love to see a guy like him get into camp. But, you know, other than that, I thought like my board was pretty clean by the end of the day. I didn't have a lot of guys left. And that's pretty unusual for me. I usually miss a lot when it comes to the draft. And I've got guys that I had as second and third rounders that were completely left by every single team. And that just didn't happen this year. So, yeah, they're going to have to be clever. And again, I'll take the Argos brass over anyone else's in the league. They'll find the guys to bring in. I think it also helps being in Southern Ontario with so many university football programs, you know, less than a couple hours away.
Well, and I guess leading into to training camp, to be honest, we've been doing this a little bit sparingly throughout the off season, a lot less than you have. So is there any matchup just going into training camp that you're keying on to see how it plays out?
You know, in terms of like where guys line up or how the roster builds out?
Yeah, if there's a battle that you think is you know for a spot that's going to be there, or something that a standout that you might see that you know we don't.
Maybe I think there's a couple that are interesting. And first, like just to transition from this draft class into what we're talking about with camp, I think even this draft class is pretty interesting because I think all of these guys have the potential to be able to make the team this year, but a lot of these guys actually have eligibility left. And we've seen the Argos do that in the past where they've had a guy come up for camp that they drafted. He's not quite ready yet. They send him back for another year and then he joins the team the following season. Sam Baker is the most recent guy that comes to mind like that, but they've had a number of guys in the past. There was an offensive lineman out of Guelph as well that they did that with, and I've forgotten his name now. But you know, that's the first thing. So see how this class is, and anyone that's not ready, not all of them, they don't, and I wish I knew, I'd have to look more carefully through, but yeah, most of these guys haven't used up all of their U Sports eligibility, so they could go back for another season. So that would be one thing. And then transitioning to like the battles that we're interested in looking at for camp, I think there's two really interesting ones. I think we all want to know who that fifth receiver is going to be, and we all want to know who that other corner is going to be. I think in our heads we can kind of paint most of the rest of the picture, which is saying something because the last few seasons it's been tough. You remember like 2 years ago where they had like 22 receivers in camp and we had no idea who was going to start anywhere. It's not like that this year. You know where you're going to have Daniels and Ambles and Giddens Jr. And it's only after that where you're saying, well, maybe Cam Phillips fills in here and now we've got one more spot to fill out. And that's interesting. You know, is it going to be a guy like Coxey or a guy like Haddell, or is it one of the new guys they've brought in? There's some exciting ones. BJ Bird, I know, is going to be a favorite just on his name alone. But Hefo is another one that I think is really exciting. I want to see what he can do in camp. There's some guys with serious speed at the receiver position, too. And then you're talking about the same thing on defense. At that other corner spot, man, they've got some talented DBs that they brought in, but it doesn't always work out. They've brought in guys before from big schools, and you really expect something out of them, and they just can't quite figure out the CFL game. But Parnell Motley, I'm really excited about, a corner that played at Oklahoma. Everything you see of him on film, you're like, man, this guy's lights out. Like, why is he not in an NFL camp? Why is he not on an NFL team at 25 years of age? But you know, he could come in and be amazing, or maybe he's like one of these other guys that you thought would be amazing and just for some reason it doesn't quite work. And then there's another guy that I think maybe the most interesting guy in camp, 21-year-old Quantez Stiggers, I think is going to be fascinating. This guy is, I think he's coming from the Fan Control Football League. I think that's the only league he played in post high school, and is just a ridiculous athlete. But he doesn't have the same college background that everyone else has coming in, having played under a really structured college system for 3 or 4 years. And this guy's, you know, coming in very, very raw. And yet you look at his athleticism and his instincts are just elite. So maybe he's amazing. Maybe his lack of experience shows up right away. So that's, you know, those are guys I'm really interested to see at camp.
Well, they actually yesterday on the draft broadcast, when they were teeing up the Argo selection, under the projected starters, they actually listed Dejon Brissett. So I was wondering if they have him projected as the fifth receiver.
It makes sense if you are going to, like, if you're going to have a Canadian, it's one position that they are a little bit short, I guess, on experience, because if it's going to be another Canadian there with Gittens Jr., then it's probably got to be Brissett, I guess, unless it's Tommy Neild. It's one of those two guys. But I just don't think the Argos need to do that. They've got, you're already dressing, like, let's assume that they're going to have at least three Canadians on the line, but let's give the Americans the benefit of the doubt and say that they're going to win the two tackle spots. So we've got three Canadians on the line. You've got Gittens Jr. to make four. You're probably starting Robbie Smith with that huge contract you're paying him, and you've got enough line rotation guys to be able to have a defensive lineman always on the field, a Canadian. And then you've got Royce Metchie at safety, you've got Enoch Mwamba at linebacker, or Jordan Williams comes in to replace him. So you don't need another receiver, another Canadian receiver. You could have, but I think it's gonna be pretty tempting to have, you know, a guy like Coxey or one of these new guys that makes an impression. I think it'll be pretty tempting to have them out there.
Plus, you're going to have, well, Andrew Harris at running back occasionally as well.
Yeah, and you can do that if need be. Like, let's say there's an injury that you have trouble replacing. Well, yeah. You know, now we can use the Canadian side of the backfield.
Yeah, I guess my two question marks heading into the season, concerns, I guess, is that boundary side of the secondary. With Shaq not coming back and Jamal Peters going to the NFL, it's kind of like, I mean, I think they're probably hoping Roberts and Daniel can just stay healthy at this point. But after 2 years of barely playing, I'm not too optimistic there. And you know, Maurice Carnell IV got a ton of interceptions last year, but you know, how will he do as the full-time guy? And then I guess on the receiving core, I'm a bit. If we're going with Chad Kelly at quarterback, I don't know if our receiving core is. Let me put it this way. We know Gittens should be good for 1,000. The Davaris Daniels and Markeith Ambles, their ceiling's probably the 800, 900 yard range. So we kind of want, you know, Cam Phillips and one of the other guys to see if they can't push, you know, 1,000. And, you know, I know CFL teams don't have, you know, you don't see 3, 4 1,000-yard receivers per team anymore. But nonetheless, I just felt as the free agent season went on, I'm like, yeah, I'm a little bit apprehensive about some of the depth there.
Yeah, and I totally get that. I think that's fair. But I think you've also got, like, it's not unusual year after year. You see this with CFL teams all the time. Like, to know you're a starting five receiver at this stage, if you go around the league and say to every other team, like, you know who your starting five receivers are, there's not a lot of teams off the top of their head. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, it's these five guys. Like, they have, like, look at what's happening in Calgary right now. They have no idea who probably three of those guys are going to be. And that's a team that's generally pretty organized and, you know, have all their ducks in a row. And I think to have the Argos situation where you pretty much know four of the five at this point, and there are at least options for the fifth, like without even thinking about any of the new guys, we already know that it could be Brissett, but it could be Hedell. It could be Coxie. Like, all of those guys, Coxie got a lot of playing time last year. He looked really good when he was in there. So you could put him in there right away and not really worry too much. But then you've got all these new guys too. And there's going to be somebody. There's going to be somebody that just jumps off the field in camp. And we don't know who that's going to be, but there's a ton of these guys that could do it.
And we don't, you know, I know he's not 20, you know, 4 years old anymore, but, you know, Dontrell Inman, see what he's got left in the tank. At least he's a guy who's played in this league.
Yeah, and again, if that's, like, if he's your fifth option, that's not bad. Like, he probably isn't, right? So that's, again, why I'm not too worried about the receivers. Is, like, in a worst-case scenario, is that the worst-case scenario? Dontrell Inman's your fifth receiver? That's pretty good. No, I'll take that as a oh man, this didn't work out. We've got this longtime NFL player as our fifth option.
I would take that in a heartbeat if we had to.
Right. Yeah. That's like, think of the other years we've had, you know, think of the, you know, having to rely on Jimmy Ralph, and nothing against Jimmy Ralph, but, like, you know, some of the revolving doors that we've had at the Z position over the years where you're just like, who is that guy out there? So, you know, they're really not in that situation. So I get the apprehension, and I think that what that speaks to is just how solid this roster is, where if you really break down what Argos fans are worried about, we're not sure about one corner spot, we're not sure about one receiver spot, but there are possibilities, there are answers, there are guys that have done it before. And if it needs to be Priester and Holden or whoever, Maurice Carnell, like, those guys got in last year, they played. So they're not just, it's not just brand new guys to the CFL that you're having to throw out there. So I think they're in a pretty good spot. And there's also a chance that Jamal Peters is back at some point too. So we hope not, you know, we hope for Peters that he sticks with Atlanta and goes on to have a really nice NFL career. But more often than not, those guys do come back. And so maybe that solves a lot of problems.
Selfishly, I want him back.
For sure. Yeah, no, like your heart, you know, wants him to do well and succeed. Or maybe that's your brain. I don't know which is which. But yeah, the angel and devil on your shoulders, right? The angel wants him to have a great career in Atlanta and make millions of dollars and be happy. And we never see him again up here. But yeah, the devil on the other shoulder wants him back in a week, starting at corner for the Argos.
The devil on my shoulder says, why the hell did you go to a team that blew a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl?
It's the kind of team that could use some corner help, I guess.
Plus, the Winnipeg player went there and made the team. So,
Yeah, that's I was talking to the Locked On Falcons guys. I think it was a couple of months ago. I think it was right after Peters signed, but they were really excited because they had had a positive experience with CFL guys coming down there and actually having an impact. So they were really hopeful that Peters could come in there and do something. And it all depends on the system too. Like, he shouldn't really, if you look at him on paper, he shouldn't really be a good CFL corner, and yet he's fantastic as a CFL corner. But he's in a system that allows him to be, like Coach Dinwiddie's system, that has him either dropping way off in like a cover four or playing the flats where he can be this like devastating run contributor. Those are the two things he does really well. So it plays to his strength. If he's out there having to play in man coverage against speedy wideouts, he's not going to last very long. So it depends what they do down there in Atlanta.
Well, I guess a lot of things to watch, I guess, a lot of little things to watch in training camp for the Argos. Ben, want to thank you for joining us. We'll probably have to talk to you again during training camp, so we know what's going on.
Yeah,
we might see you at training camp for all we know. So
yeah, that's one of my favorite parts of training camp. You never know who's going to show up. So I'm sure I'll run into you guys. It's usually like one at a time that I'll end up seeing you guys on different days. But yeah. I can't wait for it. Football is just around the corner.
It's May 14th, but they always do that. I guess, no, they do run a full practice now. I remember in the years past, it was just a walkthrough, so nobody ever bothered to go. But, May 14th in Guelph, hopefully it's a sunny day.
The last couple of years in Guelph, it has rained at some point during every day of the summer, it feels like.
Yes, where you had left last year before that deluge of.
Oh, I remember you tweeting about it, that it basically got like biblical at some point. I left and it was bright sunshine. And then I looked at my Twitter feed and there's like pictures of Will underwater at the same stadium I was at just minutes ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, the weather in this little pocket tends to change very, very, very fast.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you can, I know it all too well.
I've done the drive to Guelph because that's my parents are there now, but we have gone through all four seasons in one day on the drive from Georgetown to Guelph, and that's only 45 minutes.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So, there's some weird weather pockets in this little spot of Southern Ontario on the lake. So,
well, once you hit the 519 area code, now shit gets weird.
Hey, I lived in the western edge of Mississauga, and there was such a weather pocket along there that along Winston Churchill, you could have one weather activity on one side of the street and the complete opposite on the other side of the street.
Wait till you mm-hmm. go to Florida and it's raining in your backyard, but not your front yard.
I've yet to see that on a football field where it's like raining in one end zone, but not the other. That I think would be spectacular.
That would be that would be both the weirdest and probably the coolest thing you'd ever see. Because you
see, like something out of the Truman Show or something.
Yeah, because like on one side of the field, guys are like, you know, like nice sure-footed. But then on the other side of the field, one nice little pass, guy dives for it and he ends up sliding on wet turf for like a good 30 yards.
I imagine there's probably a high school in like Daytona Beach that has had that. Because I remember walking through a 6-foot rainstorm that stretched from the ocean all the way up onto the mainland. Just a 6-foot stretch, just, you know, like a line.
It's so weird. So, yeah. It makes you ask a lot of questions when you see something like that. So yeah, if you were standing on the sideline of a football field and your team's getting rained on and the other side there's a rainbow and sunshine, you'd feel like there were forces at work.
You'd be pondering your career at that point. It's like, am I really doing the right thing here? Is this a sign?
See, I'd take that as the complete opposite. That would be like, okay, I'm the evil. and that's where my mindset would go right away. I would just be, that would be, okay, put me out there. I'm going to kill somebody. I'm going to break three people in half. That's where I would be.
I guess it depends on the, it depends if you're the home team or the away team, though.
Oh, not for me. If it's raining on my side and I'm seeing sunshine on the other, oh, I'm making everybody's life in the sunshine miserable. Well, Ben, thanks for joining us again. Remind everybody, since it's been a little bit since you've been on the show, where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter, Ben_Grant, and you can find all my stuff at xsandargos.com, and occasionally you can find my things on 3DownNation as well. So please follow along on Twitter, and I'll always put out links to everything I do there.
All right, Ben, thanks for joining us. And then anybody who is not checked out the X's and Argos, if you want to know anything about any of our players and how they play, that's where you got to find it. That's where we find it.
As well, I'm getting all my stuff from you guys, so I don't know how this is going to work. But it's always a pleasure. I love joining you guys.
We have the weird history stuff. You have the X's and Argos, for lack of a better term.
Exactly. Well, it's a good sort of symbiotic relationship there. And I learned something today, Clay. I know now where Spencer Nichol went to high school. So there we go.
All right. Thanks, Ben. You have a great night.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Ben.
And that was Ben Grant from the X's and Argos. Always fun to have him on. So training camp is in Guelph. We touched a bit with Ben on this. Training camp, rookie camp, opens on May 10th. So 3-day camp, which includes veteran quarterbacks and first-year CFL players. And they've got a couple new roster cuts. They're going to cut down to 85 players on May 13th, the day before the veterans have to report on May 14th. And then 2 days later, they're trimming the roster by another 10 players to 75. And eventually, by the end of training camp, they'll get down to 65, I think, something like that. Somewhere around that, but yeah. And if you haven't already got your tickets, preseason game is going to be at Alumni Stadium in Guelph, April 20th.
April?
Or sorry, no, June.
It's May now. June.
May. It's more in May.
Yeah.
June the 2nd. June the 1st.
June 1st. I was looking at another date on here when tickets go on sale. They went on sale on April 20th.
Yeah, get my ticket.
and the game is June 1st at 7 o'clock. They're going to be playing the Ottawa Redblacks. And I mean,
awful lot of excitement there.
Well, one can only get so excited for preseason football.
Yeah.
I mean, it's football.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
We should be excited. We've only been waiting 6 months. But I really don't want the title party to end. You know? Now we got to defend the damn thing.
It's going to win it again.
Yep. Yeah, I know. But I'd rather not defend it. I'd rather just have it acclaimed to us, you know?
Just give it
back to us in a walkover.
The other nice thing that the Argos are going to have a training camp in Guelph this year is access to their brand new field house. So if they need to bring training camp inside because it's a torrential downpour,
which is very likely,
they actually can go inside and have a full field there.
It's because it's rained for a week straight. Do people think it may rain during training camp?
Well, you know, odds are.
Yeah.
If you're interested, I'm taking a look at the forecast here. Taking a look at the
long range forecast.
The extreme long range. And it looks like, so you said May the 10th it starts, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. 14 degrees, possible, the 60% chance of showers. But then you take a look at the days after, it's looking to be fair. Temperatures are pretty good, but there are days where rain is, like Saturday, they're calling for cloudy and rain all day. Saturday the 13th, Sunday the 14th. Mix sun and cloud with possibility of rain. So,
first day of training camp is going to be windy.
But
yeah, it's like 11 days away. The weather will be like different by then.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's looking not too bad. So, all right, well, and training camp opens on Mother's Day.
Oh.
So there you go. There you go. Treat your mom out to a day with the Argos and then go get brunch afterwards.
I think my mother will be so excited to go watch Argo practice. An Argo game, I mean, she'll go to that. Well, she does, but.
I'm not sure my mother or my mother-in-law or my wife would enjoy going to an Argos practice for Mother's Day.
Well, I think my parents have to go down to Florida to get the car, so they may not even be home.
Oh. Well, I don't know if there's any other news that we need to talk about.
You mean other than potentially all the amateur accountants from Hamilton and Regina saying you guys cheated to win the cup?
Did anybody? I don't know.
No one said it, but I was bracing myself for it.
Yes, the Argos violated this. Yes, we have to acknowledge the Argos violated the salary cap by $50,000. Don't do it again.
But so did three. But three other teams also violated the salary cap, including the 4-14 Ottawa Red Blacks.
Hey,
and one team bought like $500.
That well, the Ottawa Red Blacks were like 149 or something like that.
No, it wasn't that much. Like Winnipeg was the most at like 65, right?
Winnipeg was 65K. Yeah.
Because if it's more than 100,000, you start losing shit.
Yeah, well, it's a dollar for dollar for until you get to 100,000, and then the price goes up, and there's draft picks lost and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, we broke the salary cap. We also did have the most man games lost to injury. So honestly, if we were under the salary cap, I would probably be
disappointed.
I would be asking who
let the dogs out.
Yeah.
who?
No, I'm not. Get it out, Nick. Whoever you are.
Nick. I'm not a grammatical nightmare. Knock it off.
I'd be wondering where the funny accounting was there, because there was no way, shape, or form that we were able to not go above the $5.35 million salary cap at that point. And it was Montreal that was $794 over the cap.
Such an uneven, well, it is an even number, but it's such an uneven number to be over by. $794 and 76 cents.
Well, honestly, the way that some of these contracts are structured, I wouldn't be surprised if, they were just like, okay, well, they could make a grammatical error, a accounting error, and lose $794 somewhere down the line.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me with that one.
It's like,
all right, who expensed all this pizza?
They do have a good pizza in Montreal.
Yep.
I mean, you can easily do it with like, 800 bucks worth of pizza in Montreal. Well,
spending on players.
I mean, that might, the 800 yeah. bucks in pizza might just do the offensive lineman. Yeah, and if you're looking in the comment sections on there, there are people saying, oh, the two biggest cheaters were in the Grey Cup. Shocking. Literally, like, we were just under 50,000 and Winnipeg was 65,000. Breaking the cap by that much is not that much.
As the great rugby referee Nigel Owens once said, if you're going to cheat, cheat fair.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
Oh. Do we have anything for the 3-minute warning, Doug?
Oddly enough, no, not this time. I think we've pretty much
covered everything.
Yeah, we've covered everything. It's slow.
Even our friend Anton from Kazakhstan is.
Seems like he's been working overtime on the potash mine.
Yeah.
I haven't even noticed it.
Well, I mean, you know, he replied to the CFL Reddit on April 20th when they said, if you were CFL commissioner, what is the first thing you would do? And he wrote, more Argo games in the East, more East than usual.
We all know what he's talking about.
Now that the Jets are out, you know.
And
I think he wants it a little closer to him.
And his March 28th reply to Peter Dayakowski, who is officially losing the Canada Smartest Man title after this tweet. Repeat after me. The Ticats were founded in 1869. And they've won 15 Grey Cups.
Your team is a Frankenstein of three other teams. Fuck off.
and our friend Anton just simply replied with the gif of Elf, you sit on a throne of lies.
Exactly.
But yeah, other than that, I think he's been working a little overtime. Maybe he'll have enough to get bring some yak milk to BMO Field, maybe. Anton, if you're listening, we need to know. Are you going to have enough money to bring us some yak milk?
You look for the yak.
I'll get a Kazakhstan flag for my flagpole for the tailgate. People will wonder, what the hell is that?
It'll be a conversation piece.
It wouldn't be the first time I brought a strange flag to a tailgate. I mean, it did bring that Rangers flag once after they won the 55th title.
Well, you know.
So, I mean, it was a good time to celebrate.
All right, guys, I think that does it for the Argos Fancast this week. Will, where can they find you?
On Twitter at ArgoFans or at www.argofans.com.
Doug, where can they find you?
Find me on Twitter at DougB519. You can find the Double Blue Order, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Go check out the Toronto Argonauts subreddit. We're approaching 2,500, not 25,000, I wish. 2,500 subs. That's at reddit.com/r/Argonauts. Also, the Double Blue Order merch store. Law Firm t-shirt still available because McLeod is doing kicking ass down south. DoubleBlueOrder.ca.
All right, gentlemen, you have...
What the... Whoa, malfunction out there, Chuck!
The bad. The ugly.
Malfunction at the junction.
Whoops.
Finger slipped.
Hard to do a good, bad, and the ugly when they didn't play the game.
Oh.
A little late for that, isn't it? Isn't it? Good, yeah, bad, and ugly of the offseason? Whoa. Yeah.
You can find me at All Kinds of Clay on the Twitter and Instagram machines. You can find this show at Argos Fancast, or anywhere you find your friendly neighborhood podcast, just search Argos Fancast or go directly to Spotify. Type in Argos Fancast on there and you'll find us. Oh, Spotify for powering us. And we want to thank Ben Grant of the X's and Argos for joining us to recap the draft and prep us for training camp. We'll talk to you guys again when we're playing football. Everyone.